Pickaxe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Triforce podcast.
We're back.
Today, we're back. We're here. Pyrion, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing? You sound a little down.
I'm not down. Well, I am a little down.
He's down.
I just saw the Cadbury's Twitter had replied that cream egg is actually pronounced creme egg.
No.
And I can't believe it.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's spelt creme. I don't know why people...
It's clearly
so confused.
Oh, so you've said creme egg all these years?
No, I never have because I'm not French, but it is spelt like in the French way. So
well, tough.
Oh, I see, like the French
wait,
way.
Wait, so
I
guess is this true?
Le creme.
Is this actually true? It's meant to be a creme egg.
Official, but then again, it's a little bit like the inventor of GIF coming out and saying
you mean
pronounced GIF or whatever the wrong way around. Whichever way he
poor
done.
Flax, his whole world is being rocked right now. It's not GIF. It's not creme. What next?
GIF and it's cream, obviously. But this is just clever marketing. There was that thing the other week where the Weetabix Twitter did that thing where they put, how about baked beans on your Weetabix this morning?
That's disgusting.
There's no way anyone said that looks delicious. But they know it's going to go viral. And you know that this was intended because all the other brands jumped in. They were like, oh shit, we've got to be in on this Twitter thread. So you had like KFC tweeting on there and like every other brand you could imagine that was like vaguely British or had a presence in Britain was tweeting on this shit. It's all just social media people having a laugh and getting some good marketing in there. There's no way it's creme egg.
I kind of feel like Weetabix with baked beans might work though. I haven't tried it.
Did you see the picture?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And
because one of Mrs. F's most hated things is baths full of beans. She hates
them. Oh, yeah.
Some people have like bean phobia.
What is in your cans of beans?
For me, is a bath full of spiders. Yeah. I would never get into that.
There's
bath.
Some
bean bath.
There'll be a name. There'll be a fucking name
of
for phobia of beans. Do you know what I mean? It'll be some dumbass, long-ass name that someone's created.
All
Leguminophobia.
Right.
There you go. Thank you.
Is that actually...
Thank you.
You've looked
An
it
irrational,
up.
Irrational fear of baked beans. Yeah, look, here you go. Man has crippling phobia of baked beans.
Right.
Mr. Griffiths it feels faint and gets shaky if someone puts the breakfast favorite meal anywhere near him.
Oh,
maybe
he's
had like
as
a traumatic experience in the past relating
well,
to beans.
What with a bath? He almost drowned in a bath of baked beans on a charity event or something.
God.
He describes them as the orange devils.
Right.
He had to quit his previous job as a chef
to make
a full English breakfast.
No way.
He just refuses to cook beans.
I think it might be the smell that weirds him out. He looks very distressed.
My worst possible job is being a chef at Butlin's. It's nonstop. They want beans all the time.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. Fuck.
So yeah. I will say, like, I saw this as well. You know how they always, there's this thing where they can get names for any old shit.
Mm-hmm.
Phobias is the other one, but there's like there's loads of words that mean these sort of emotions, right? So I saw this thing on Reddit last week. It's like 23 emotions people feel but can't explain.
Right, okay. What's one of them?
And so there's like words for them. So well, obviously sonder, you might have heard of that.
Is that when you're just so horny and you just don't know what to do with yourself? Is that one?
I think it might be on the list somewhere.
Is it after you've had a wank and you kind of feel regret, but also a little bit of pleasure and relaxation as well?
Yes, there's a Japanese word for that, actually.
Of course there is.
It's like that period of wisdom and clarity that comes after finishing.
All right.
I can find it.
There's
I can
Japanese
find it.
Word for that. Nice.
Wisdom and clarity is not how I'd put it.
Yeah, no, I... It's, just lots of sort of, I don't know how I feel after, actually. I've never really stopped to think
about
it.
It's called Kenja Taimu. Right. Period of clear thoughts when a man is free from sexual desires after having an orgasm. There you go.
Damn.
Lasts about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And
the desires just ramp up again slowly over the course of the 5 minutes after, and then you're just back to square one.
Yep.
Before you know it, all you've done all day is just masturbated all day long.
There was a big problem with working from home, wasn't it? It was people that were working from home during
all
lockdown,
the damn time.
Didn't have anyone else around to sort of moderate their...
Rein them in, yeah.
Yeah, they just kind of
Maybe they're going to transcend to this higher state of being, though, due to like constantly wanking and just, you know, they'll eventually that... Five minutes will stretch onwards, and they have no sexual desire any ever, you know. And
so
all
if
they
anyone
do,
interrupts
maybe
you.
the wisdom is being put into. Maybe we'll have like a whole renaissance of amazing creation after the pandemic, you know, because people have been locked in their homes, forced to innovate.
maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
Is that going to happen?
No,
they were locked in their homes just jerking it 24/7, getting Sonder or whatever that means.
So Sonder is the realization that every passerby, everyone else you see, has a life as vivid and complex as your own.
Right.
Isn't that just kind of empathy?
I wouldn't imagine a lot of people do actually feel that one. Maybe that's why it's on the list of feeling something and not being able to explain it, because you feel it like so seldomly or whatever. Because I feel like a lot of people don't realize that about other people. They just think that they're the most complex person and the world revolves around them.
Basic empathy. If you can't look at another human and realize that the depths of you and the depths of them are equally deep depths, then
tremendous
get your fucking sonder on.
Yeah,
but maybe also it's like kind of a bit of a wake up call in a sense. That feeling, I don't know what I would describe it as, but it's definitely the feeling where you realize that you're not important because everyone else is equally as important. I don't know. It sort of takes a little bit away from your sense of self importance. It's not like it's almost like a disappointing feeling. I mean.
I guess I guess people like to think of themselves, everybody likes to think of themselves as unique, right? I mean, I know that consciousness existing, you know, you sort of live behind your eyes in this weird bubble where you feel like you're an observer, some special observer. You have your unique perspective is from behind your eyes of looking out and seeing everything, and other people just seem to be, you can't imagine that they're looking at you from their perspective and assessing you and life, and they've got desires and dreams and fears, and you know they might be terrified of baked beans, and here you are on your annual dress up as a baked bean.
You got
bean
a whole
walk.
Tin that you've just opened up and you're eating them raw, like at the bus stop.
You're at the spring fair float on the baked bean bath float, going past the
just going ham, having
legumophobia,
screaming with joy and stuff, and that's somebody else's hell, but you don't. You discount that because you just
think
you're the center of the universe. This me and my bean elation are the center of the universe right now. There's nothing else.
So that is one of the words on the list. One of them is onism or oneism. I think
onism?
The idea of the frustration of being stuck in just one body that inhabits a single place at a single time. You know, like do you ever? I don't know if I ever feel this, but do you ever feel frustrated that you aren't able to be in like a cosmic being?
No.
You couldn't like him.
No.
That could be everywhere at once. I think some of these feelings I've never felt, and I wondered whether you'd felt any of them. So
that's a very weird one.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm a very sad individual, but I'm happy to say not that sad. So that's something that I've
got
going for me.
You've got that. Yeah.
At least I have that. Yeah.
Have you ever felt, and I think this is what may be true of the baked bean guy, the realization that the plot of your life doesn't make sense to you anymore. Because apparently that is
a thing
called nodus tollens.
Right.
And apparently people feel this.
Isn't that just the general confusion of life? Like,
right.
I think that we have this idea that everybody else has got their shit together.
Yeah.
And they don't. Nobody
does. Nobody really does.
Everybody's like, kind of muddling through.
I find
trying to figure shit out.
I find it's the people who always seem to have their shit together the most that
tend to not, and then fall the hardest. I said that in reverse.
Hard the fallest.
But do you, I noticed this even more so on social media. I don't know if you guys notice this as well sometimes. You know, you'll see somebody and they'll be like, oh my God, like here are my stats. I've done so well. I'm doing this and that. Oh God, everything is great. I love everybody. And then literally the next day it's like, oh guys, I got to take like a month off. anxiety's flaring up big time.
I think it's mania a lot of the time. That kind of stuff. It's like really, manic episodes that people have. It's odd, isn't it?
Like you see it quite often. You know, you see that from somebody, you're like, holy shit, this fucking person, like, what the hell? They're killing it out there. Like they're nonstop. And then the next day that happens, you're like, well, I guess maybe they weren't killing as much as I thought they were.
Yeah.
You know,
they were killing their brain. Wow.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, isn't it?
I think a lot of the time, if someone does something that pushes them above the average, I think a lot of the instinct is to think, oh, they're just so much better than me. And that's why. But a lot of the time, people just manically overwork, push themselves harder. They are good at what they do, and they do work very hard at it, but to a degree that's so far above the human average that, in fact, their brain, which is still a human brain, just can't handle it.
Striving for perfection as well is like a common trap too, right? That people just get carried away, and then they can never, nothing can ever live up to this standard or expectation that you've set, and then they just fall so hard. And you just sort of think, well, I don't know, like you just have to have like a healthier or more realistic view on life, right? Not everything is as perfect. And sometimes, things are perfect the way they are, like even though you might not think it at the time, but it's like, you know, sometimes the way something is the perfect way for it to be. You just don't realize it.
Yeah. Lewis, what is the emotion, if there is one?
Go on.
First of all, for interrupting you like twice, I apologize for that.
I'll find it.
Okay, but the other one is for discovering that someone else was, say, as nervous or worried about something as you were, but didn't show it. And then when you realize that they were as worried, there's like a huge sense of relief that you weren't the only one who was worried or nervous.
Right. Well, I think almost all of these emotions are things like just relief and disappointment. I think imagine you have a feeling of 25% relief and 75% disappointment.
Right.
I think that is probably called ellipsism or some bullshit. Do you know what I mean? Ellipsism is the sadness that you'll never be able to know how history will turn out. And I feel like that isn't like something which...
No, I think I actually get that quite often.
But...
like I'd love to know where we end up.
I think you could like chef that together in the kitchen from two parts avocado, a tin of baked beans, a dash of disappointment, and a splash of, you know.
But wouldn't you love to know
ennui,
where whatever. We're going to be in like 1,000 years time to go and look at Earth and see how things have changed? I would love that, even if it would be awful. It's like you're watching a tiny part. It's like if you think about human civilization. It's like a very long film and you have a very brief cameo, but you don't get to watch the rest of the production. Like you just get to see a little slice of it. You have no idea how the film ends and you only have a vague idea of how it began. And your role is a bit part. You're a walk-on extra that just walks through the back of the scene. Nobody's even going to notice you unless they pause or you accidentally catch on fire in the middle of the scene and somehow you stand out. But in general, you're just a single frame in this colossally long film. I want to see the end. I want to see how it ends. Or hopefully it never does.
You know, I see what you're saying. And it is, I have felt this too. You know, it's funny because you think, oh, you know, I'm never going to live to see jetpacks, you know.
First thing he goes to. I wanted to see jetpacks.
I'm not going to be able to go into space.
What about those skateboards that kind of hover? Yeah, they don't really cut it. Dies.
I don't know. So
do you guys feel bummed out about any of this stuff, really, though? Or, like, is it just
for pondering. Like, I'll just suddenly...
I think it is. I think that's it. It is that. This is a list of things, which is things that lightly bum you out. That's what it is, right? Like, here's ocularism. Is the awareness of the smallness of your perspective.
Right. Mm.
The awareness of the smallness of your perspective. It's like, well, yeah, sure. I mean, that's again, it's linked to everything else, right? It's like the idea that everyone around you has something interesting to say. But on Twitter, you know, people put their, on Instagram and all these social media platforms, people put their best self out there. And sometimes they're kind of lying to themselves when they do that, you know, as well. Like, they're putting this fake kind of idea of what they want other people to see them as. Because it's very much me, 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 me. And I think a lot of people don't really see much beyond that. There's another one on this list where, which we have a little bit of a habit of doing, anecdote. I think it's something we've heard, you may have heard before. A conversation in which everyone is talking, but nobody is listening.
Yeah, I mean, that's the perfect summary of this podcast,
well,
really.
Yeah.
If we renamed it, it should be
it's
that.
It's weird with podcasts, though, because, like, I think like our friendship is based on doing an activity together, right? We know each other through gaming, right? So I think it's natural that there is some degree of that, because normally when we'd be chatting, we'd be doing something else. Like, I'm doing something else right now because it's just, you know, I'm here. I'm not just like sitting here with my eyes closed talking to you guys or listening to you. I mean, sorry, but you know what I mean? I think it's kind of weird, but it makes sense too. You know, like, we would have been playing WoW together. We would have been playing something else together, where there's times where you're concentrating on something else, not necessarily listening. But even in real life with friends, it's like that sometimes too. Right, you're not always listening. Sometimes you're just talking, filling air or whatever, and not listening. I don't know. I think that's like surprisingly more natural than a lot of people think. You know what I mean? Like, you guys aren't listening, are you? No.
No. Once you said you weren't listening, I tuned out.
Yeah, no, I
know. No, we're joking.
Understandable.
You're exactly right. I think it is that we enjoy just spending time with people when it feels comfortable and it feels easy. You don't have to, you don't really have to try. I think that's why this podcast has worked for so long, because it's not,
God,
you know, it's
a
safe space as well,
man.
Right? It's a safe space. I will say, like, I've been hanging out on some Discords, me and some different people playing. So one of the Discords I'm on is TTS Club, which is the tabletop sim.
Good
it's
Lord.
Like a little private tabletop sim club.
Nice,
it's not
nice.
Private. Anyone can join.
Right.
But it's basically, there's a looking for group Discord and people posting there teaching this game. And so this week I learned a game called Barrage,
right,
which is like a game where water comes down at the top of the board and it flows down. You have to build dams. And then obviously when the water comes through your dam, you get power. But depending on where the power's gone, the water's still there. Someone else can use that water to power their dam. And so it's kind of this
damn
push and pull game. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
It took this poor guy forever to explain it. And after we played it, I looked through the rules. It turned out he'd like basically just totally taught everyone wrong.
Right.
All the rules were wrong.
Right.
But I had a great time. I played a game called Smartphone Inc., where we all had to be like smartphone owners.
Wow, what a break from the norm.
We played a game called...
Don't you own a smartphone? Well, what does that mean, you have to be a smartphone owner? I mean, I own a phone. How can you build a game around that?
Owner of a smartphone company.
Okay, that makes sense.
Selling smartphones across the world,
okay.
like a Steve Jobs.
That's just reminded me.
Go on,
sorry.
No, you interrupt. I'll come back.
If it's interrupt worthy... I'll be Sondon if you don't tell me about
it. Honestly, Sips, if you have something to say that's more interesting than this...
No, carry on. No, you just reminded me of something I needed to do.
Oh!
All right.
Something you needed to do.
It's nothing interesting.
It's a task. Oh. A dad task.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've learned these board games. Another one I learned was So You've Been Eaten, which is like... basically where you can there's these big space monsters and you're a little astronaut mining for stuff and you get eaten. Anyway, it's quite fun. And so one of the people I met doing this said was odd, a little bit odd, but like fairly normal guy, sounded like a fairly normal guy, but he said to me, I hate books.
Right.
And I kind of want to role play this out with you almost a little bit. Like if I said to you, yeah, I hate books.
Yeah.
You hate books.
You know who else hated books?
Hitler.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Well,
I see where this is going.
Some books.
Yeah, I see where this is going.
I think it was just a plot to drive up the sales of Mein Kampf. If you only have one book in the store, you know, it's going to look great on the
mein
bottom
book.
Line.
Yeah.
You can't just
mine.
Imagine I'm a
poet. I wonder how different it would have been, his story. Yeah, now I present to you my book. Very good.
Das Buch.
Das Buch, das Sequel.
Oh, shit. So obviously I didn't say that to him, didn't I? I didn't just go, you're Hitler, did I, to this random fucking guy I just met?
No, you should have. I said the bollocks to tell him. You know who else?
No, I said to him the kind of thing I always... There's loads of choices you have. Either you can sort of make a joke about it or you can... So mine is like kind of my traditional go-to is like agree... but question kind of thing, like oh yeah, I know, I've read some really terrible books, but actually there's some really good ones out there. Have you read this book, right? For example, I'll suggest something like Brandon Sanderson. You know what I mean? People, I try and talk to people in a way that if they say something weird to me like that, I don't want to upset them or offend them.
Listen to
but
me,
I also
Lewis.
Want to question.
Listen to me.
I want to dig though. I want to figure out what's
Hear
ticking
me now.
With this guy.
I'm going to help you out. What? That's a real fucking milquetoast wank response to a shitty opinion.
Right.
Have some fucking bollocks. Tell that person, listen to me. You don't like books. You don't like books. That's as bad as saying, oh, I don't like music. It's like, what does that
it
mean?
Is.
That means
Absolutely.
You have never attempted to read a book.
Now here's the thing,
you can't have done. You must have just given up.
But I wanted to learn more about this guy. I want to wipe away the baked beans on the surface of this madness and dig and find out why he doesn't hate books.
And why does he hate books?
So I pressed him and he said, books are really boring.
Right.
And they expect you to remember... everyone's name.
Were you talking to a 9-year-old at the time? who's 9 years
this
old
this is
right?
like he I think he's like about 25 year old like Korean guy. We spoke a little bit,
right.
So I kind of like you know I was we were because you I was taught I played with a guy from Bangladesh the other day,
right?
You know, there's lots of different people across the world I've been talking to, so I find it like interesting to learn these board games. And
what a social butterfly.
Just,
like,
well, it could be worse. I mean, imagine he was just like, I hate women.
It could be way worse.
Well,
yeah,
you would have said,
you
know what, you would have said, Lewis,
a fine
yeah,
thing.
No,
I wanted
I
to do
that,
a deep dive into that.
Yeah, you would have said, yeah, no, yeah, you're right, women suck. But I've met a couple that were nice. Would you make that same argument that you made for books?
Well, I think maybe I would have been a little bit hesitant to do that. But I think that I still would have tried to figure out a way to draw out where this comes from, because I'm interested in madness and these mad people who have these
excuse.
Weird opinions.
I'm bad with those kind of things because I just
but you have to, I have to because the other thing to do is like to go parallel with it, be like oh yeah I hate books too. Like,
you
know, it's killing the planet. You know, the trees are all getting cut down. Do you know what I mean? The other thing is to like have a reason that you hate books that is completely weird as well. And then they're kind of like, oh yeah, I hate books because of this. So I'm not tricking him to opening up, but I like feel like
yeah,
I want
are
I want to know more.
Social manipulating people that you meet on the
it's
internet.
It's not
is
even.
That what this is?
You guys have done this. I'm sure you guys have done this before, where you're speaking to somebody who has there's just a certain way about them where you've decided I'm not gonna fuck with this person. Like, I don't want this person to talk any more than they need to, but I'm stuck talking to them. And you know, maybe they're old or you just know you there's just somebody that you're never gonna get through to. There's no point in you genuinely being yourself around them, and then you just sort of like compromise and agree with what they're saying, sort of thing, just to flow a conversation to its end and then leave, or you know
yeah,
what I mean,
yeah,
just
yeah.
get out of that situation.
You just placate them until it's
yes.
over.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. So you know,
there's probably a word for this. It's probably like Altenschmerz.
yeah, yeah. No, but I'm sure you guys have been in that situation.
Oh God, everyone has.
You know,
yeah.
millions
you're
of times.
Stuck with someone.
Yeah.
Like someone, a senior person in a
like
company.
A taxi driver. You're stuck
yeah,
in the car with them.
A cab driver's the classic.
And
absolutely.
They just have these fucking hot takes on everything that you're not going to get into a debate with them.
Or someone
no
you're
point.
Next to on the plane. You're
yeah.
stuck on the plane with them. And it's a 10-hour flight, and you're like, there's no point making an enemy
yeah.
for 10 hours.
Well,
I never have to see this
yeah.
person again. So I'll just nod and smile and then put my headphones on and hope that's the end
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, I think the I hate women thing is one of the ones where I wouldn't be interested in poking into it.
Yeah,
you know
of
mean?
Course.
But I think sometimes yeah. when it's something so... I guess with this one, it was almost like I was so surprised because I'm such a huge reader. And I just sort of, my instant thought was, you just can't be reading the right books, you know, which is something I said. So that's the sort of the next thing I said. I was like, oh, you know, well, I mean, maybe you're just reading the wrong books, dude. Like, you know, and he said, no, the authors expect you to remember what happened like 100 pages ago. I tried loads of different books and it's like nothing happens. They're all so boring.
I mean, it's fair enough, isn't it? Like, I mean, you're never going to convince that guy to read a book, clearly. Like, so
well, I'm not trying to convince him to read a book. I'm just,
he's
that's
decided
not my job.
That books suck and he hates them.
I just
them.
Want to know what books he's fucking reading. Because it's easy to read a shit book and think, well, that
he's
was rubbish.
He's only ever read the books from the Wheel of Time series. That's it. No other books.
Are you going to anger a lot of Wheel of Time fans now?
No, I'm not saying anything against Wheel of Time. I'm just saying, like, there's some of the books, like, you know, they drag on a little
bit. I guarantee you said some ears
they
pricked
really
up then. Wheel of Time? Did someone say something bad about Wheel of Time? That's one of those book series. I do read, but I don't read a lot of fiction.
Yeah.
I read quite a lot of sort of not biographies, but I tend to read books that are more based on facts and things like that. I find that investigative stuff quite interesting, and his things about history and stuff like that. I do read some fiction, but not a huge amount. But what I do find very boring, actually, is conversations where people are talking about books. I do like books, I do read books, but what I find dull is those conversations about books. And Wheel of Time is the classic. Someone will start talking about it and everyone will start talking about how great it is, and they'll wank on and on about it, and they'll talk about some characters that you've never heard of, and it goes on forever, much like the book series. It just goes on and on and on. And I think, at least with a movie, there's a there's so many books out there and they're so fucking long. I do understand what that guy's saying. Because I couldn't be bothered. I started reading one of the Game of Thrones books. I was bored to tears and I thought the dialogue was fucking awful. I'm sorry, fans of the books. I really thought it was laughably bad dialogue. And just, I couldn't get into it at all.
Yeah.
If that had been the only book I'd read, I'd think books suck. I get it. I actually understand where that goes.
Well, this
coming
is what
from.
I thought. I mean, actually, obviously, there were thoughts going through my head. Like, initially, I love the idea of just out crazying someone and being like, "Do you hate the Bible? But that's the best book."
Oh,
do you
know what I mean?
Like,
yeah,
just out crazy.
Yeah, sure.
But no, I don't do this kind of shit. I'm just a normal person mostly.
Mostly,
and then
no
so, emphasis on the mostly
within reason. And so that was all I really got. But I guess I thought that he might have what's that called, aphasia or whatever, where you can't imagine stuff, you can't get it in your head, you know. And so I sort of asked him that. He said, "I can't imagine something that I've never seen a picture of."
Right.
Oh,
right?
Then he has got.
So
it.
Maybe he has got some imagination like
issues
thing,
or something. Yeah.
But like,
and
I mean,
memory problems. Mm. I mean, I know that in some books like War and Peace. I haven't read it, but my mum said that the issue is that in Russian, like a name will have like 8 nicknames associated with that name. And you just kind of have to know. And you have to, like she said, there's a lot of thumbing back and forth and trying to figure out, because there'll be like 3 characters called Alexander or whatever. So, you know, you've got to try and figure out what the fuck's going on quite a lot. She said it's a real bugger to read for that reason. And there are other books like, Finnegan's Wake and stuff like that have just... so out
well,
there that they're almost impossible to read.
I wish books were more defined in a sense that it was either a book that you could read gradually or a book that you had to read almost quickly because otherwise you'd lose everything. You know, like it's been a while since I read the last Stormlight Archive and the new one's come out, and I was talking to Ben about it and I couldn't remember any of the fucking stuff. He was like, "Do you remember when this happened?" I was like, no. He was like, "Do you remember this character?"
You don't
like,
necessarily...
No.
I feel that in your mind, you're like, I have to know everything going into this. But if it's written well, it'll jog your memory. Like when you get to a point, right? You'll be like, oh shit, yeah, that happened. You know, like,
well, I do notice that. Yeah, when you're reading like book 3 of a series, you're like, it's in the first couple of chapters, it's like doing jogs, and I'm like, why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
I know this already.
And if it's something that happened way, way back, they'll go into some sort of you know, like overview detail of the thing that you're meant to have remembered, sort of thing, and that is usually enough to sort of, oh yeah, I remember that happening now. I hadn't thought about it for a while, but it's still there in my brain somewhere. Like, you know what I mean?
The Red Rising books, the original trilogy, I read all those so quickly that I actually didn't take in to the long-term memory the stuff that happened. And when I came to read Iron Gold, I got like 2 pages in and I'd completely forgotten every single character in the entire thing. So I gave up. So I'm actually super wrong criticizing this guy. But I definitely wouldn't write off books. That's a failure on my part. to be terrible at remembering things. Because you're right, I've had conversations with people where they're about Red Rising, like, what about so-and-so? Who was your favorite character? What about that bit? And and the same thing.
I didn't analyze it to that. I was the same. I read through it very quickly. I enjoyed it. But I couldn't have a conversation about the books now without, you know, I'd have to go back and reread them. And with the, like, making a point to really soak in every detail, ready for a conversation about them, right? Like, if you would have hit me up shortly after I'd read the books for a conversation about it, sure. But, like, years down the line, there's, you know, I'm not into reading or books that much. I don't hate them, obviously. I have read lots of books, but I'm just at a point in my life now where I tend not to. I just, for whatever reason, don't have time or just don't have the inclination. Like,
didn't you find that you used to read a lot? I used to read a lot when I was traveling.
Or for sure.
When I was commuting, like on the train into work, I read so many books then.
I did too.
Now,
because
I'm just at home, I don't make the time to do it because of the fucking internet.
The world's different now too. When I travel now, I don't bring a book. I bring a tablet. You know, I play games or I read on that or watch movies or whatever.
I mean,
So,
I mean, I read an hour or two every day.
Yeah, that's good for you.
Before I sleep. Because I feel like that's the best time to do it. And I always and I actually have three different books on the go, one in physical, one on my iPad, one on my phone. So I found that actually helps me because there's always one of them I'm willing to read. Because some of them I'm like, you know, you put it off and you're like, oh, I'm not really enjoying this. But you halfway through, you don't want to. I'm just worried that in the future I'll come back and say, oh, did I read this book? Can I remember what happened? And I realize I'd never actually fucking read it because I got bored in three pages in or whatever, but I can't remember. It's the same thing with TV shows, like movies as well. Like I don't like watching. I'd rather just finish a bad movie that I hate, just so I know I'm done with it.
I just don't even seek out movies anymore.
So stupid.
I just don't bother with them. Like, I'm sure there's some great ones or whatever, but I've just been out of the habit of watching movies for so long that I'm not even interested. Like, I rarely see trailers for them. I'm not a big fan of like Marvel and stuff like that, which, you know, there's a lot of movies around that stuff coming out and still. And
I don't know. Yeah,
I just tend more towards
it's a generational thing, though, right? Too, like, you know, Ben just had his 6-year-old's birthday and they watched Avengers, the first Avengers movie together,
right?
And it was like this big event, and, you know, he followed it with Ben explained to me that he followed it with this childlike joy of like actually being worried that Iron Man would die and stuff like this, like, you know, like the wonderful innocence of a child who doesn't have years of kind of cynicism built in, to them. And so, you know, you're talking about a Marvel movie. You're 40 years too old to watch that movie, Sips. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's the thing. That's why
I love the Marvel movies. I thought they were fucking great.
They're fine. They're actually
super entertaining. If one's on, I'll sit there and watch it. Like, the effects are great. That, like, the action scenes are and everything, like, they are good, you know, fun, entertaining movies. Like, I'm sure that when my son's a bit bigger and Corona's gone, I'd love to take him to like the summer blockbuster at the movie theater. Like, that experience I remember from being a kid, I loved that, you know. But for me personally, I'm not saying you're not allowed to enjoy it, but
I think that there's so much stuff made for so many different people that, you know, maybe you want something. I'm sure the most intellectually stimulating thing, you know, is equally boring. I don't want to read fucking Dostoevsky or War and Peace or any of this garb, you know, terrible wordy nonsense, you know. I don't necessarily.
No.
I mean, but I think anything could be interesting. I watched a lot of documentaries. I watched McMillions this week, which I thought was really good. It's a documentary. It's like six parts. It's about the McDonald's monopoly scam in the 90s it turns out that basically all of the big prize winners was illegitimate. Like,
they were all employees of like a company.
Wait, where is this available? I want to watch this.
It's on HBO.
All right, okay.
So I read the article about that. I think it was in The Guardian, might have been The New York Times, years ago, that essentially they realized that they couldn't just have one person keep winning this, but the company that was responsible, I think this is right, correct me if I'm wrong, Lewis, they were like getting people at the company They were giving them the winning tickets and stuff.
So is this the Monopoly, like, roll up the rim to win stuff? Like, that in the 90s? Like, when you used to have, like, the... You get the cup,
the
you scratch
board
off
and,
Boardwalk
yeah.
and Park Place
you
and
had
whatever.
The Monopoly pieces, yeah.
Holy
and so
shit.
A lot of the... I think I won a couple of free fries.
Yeah, everybody won a... The fucking Apple thing. Fucking whatever you win. The little Apple... What is it called? The apple pie.
Yeah.
Apple pie,
yeah,
apple coffee, pie. Small fries. You know, those are the things you win, but people are winning
a
lot of
money. Hugely, hugely successful, you know, hugely, hugely, like the best thing they've ever done. They tried to do it with other things like Scrabble a couple of years and other things, but it was never as big as the Monopoly.
I guess Monopoly is one of those universally understood games as well. Like everybody's played it at some point as a kid or whatever. Like
it's kind of the ultimate OG.
It was like
loot
boxes. You buy a fries and then suddenly you've got a loot box on the side of it.
Yeah.
You get to work.
So there were a lot of things they had to do to make sure it wasn't gambling as well, though, because they had to, you could always go into McDonald's and just say, can I have a ticket? And they'd give you one. And it might have free fries on it or nothing, you know. So they had to, there were these certain rules they had to take. There's this great scene, and this is no spoilers because the whole documentary is about the people involved, talking to them, all the different people and stuff. It's really interesting. But there was this great bit where, this is in the first episode, the FBI get sort of the McDonald's head honchos into the room and write down all these names on this whiteboard. And they're all like, you know, James Mason, Edwina Smith, like all different names, all different surnames.
My mom and my dad? That's crazy.
Wow.
And so they're like, do you recognize any of these names? And all the McDonald's, all the head honchos are like, no, we don't. And they're like, well, and they start drawing lines and they're like, this guy is this guy's brother. This guy is this guy's wife. This woman is this guy's sister. You know, and so everyone is linked. Like, and they calculated that it is like, it was every single one of them was a scam, you see, in some way, because... And so there was obviously someone having to give them out. You know, imagine you've got all of these fucking $1 million tickets. How do you redeem them all and get money from it? How do you even do that? And
so
there's like New York crime families involved.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
oh,
there would
loads
be,
of
yeah.
really cool stuff.
There's like all that stuff. That's how they live for that shit, right? Like that's what they're looking for. They're looking for scams like constantly. That's how they
operate.
And so,
you know, it's really interesting because it makes you realize like, how the fuck could you get away with this, you know, if you had a million, like multiple $1 million tickets? Because of course in America you pay winnings tax, and then the way it was redeemed as well wasn't just $1 million all at once, it was $50,000 a year. So, you know, actually in some ways winning this $1 million was terrible for some people, because they would get this prize, they'd be, everyone in the community that they lived in knew them because they'd be the $1 million winner, but they weren't getting that. They were getting, you know, maybe $10,000 a year on top of their shitty $20,000 a year job, or maybe they were even
unemployed. That's the thing, it was never a full payout, right? It was always in installments,
and so these people are even struggling to live through this thing, and especially because it's a scam, and so the mafia guys are taking, you know, 50%,
right?
And so they get their payoff of £50,000 for the year. Mafia take 25 grand. They pay 15 grand of winnings tax or 20 grand of winnings tax. They're left with like 5 grand.
Oh no,
it's awful.
Oh, that sucks.
And so, like, do you know what I mean? So they, but everyone thinks they're a millionaire, and so and they can't tell anyone. And so it's a really interesting story.
I'm going to watch. That sounds great. Thank you very much.
Before we carry on, thank you very much to this week's sponsor, ExpressVPN. You can get 3 months extra free at expressvpn.com/triforce. So guys, does it make sense that the same company who controls half of online retail also passively eavesdrops on your private conversations and your private browsing?
Abso-fucking-lutely not, Lewis.
Exactly. Big tech is more powerful than most countries are, and they profit by exploiting your personal data.
Damn.
Have they got nuclear weapons?
It's time to put a layer of protection between your online activity and these tech juggernauts. They've got nuclear weapons, PFLAX. Mm. We've got that space shield ExpressVPN.
Right.
You know, the old Reagan
shield
Star
up.
Wars project.
We got the bunker, yeah.
Exactly. ExpressVPN, it encrypts 100% of your data. It makes your activity hard to trace and sell to advertisers.
Right.
It protects you. You can stay anonymous and avoid getting data mined. So yeah, stop handing your personal data over to the big tech monopoly.
Oof.
You can visit expressvpn.com. Yes. /Triforce to get 3 extra months free. Thank you, and we'll carry on with the show.
I got another show to recommend. I got another show to recommend that I just finished last night. Schitt's Creek. You guys watched this show?
Oh yeah, you told us about it last week. Yeah, it's got it's got the Second City guys in it. Like
So it's Eugene Levy and his son and his daughter are in it. Honestly, I know I spoke about it last week. I've been caning it this week. Like
it gets better, doesn't it?
It's so towards good. The end. I finished it.
What, like funny little... good or just like good it, good or a mix of both?
It's very funny. It's very moving. It's beautiful. There's only six seasons of it. They created these excellent characters. And it's just a wonderful show. I really, really enjoyed it. Like start to finish.
All
right. It never tails off. There's honestly not a bad episode.
I've seen it on Netflix so many times and I thought, oh my God. Like just because the name of it, I just thought, okay, what, you know, like.
But honestly, the first two or three episodes, I wasn't into it. I really wasn't. And Mrs. F made me persist and it was fantastic.
Nice.
I absolutely loved it. So yeah, give it a try.
That's good.
I watched the Notorious B.I.G. documentary.
Any good?
That came out. Yeah, it's good. It's interesting because most of the documentaries about Biggie and Tupac are just about them getting being murdered and beefing with each other and stuff, right? But this was quite nice because it was you learn more about his upbringing. His mom is interviewed extensively in it. Puffy is in it as well. And it's just sort of like the, you know, the rock. I mean, he's just a young guy when he was killed.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, just interesting to see where he grew up, the people he grew up with, the stuff he was getting into, the people that sort of like mentored him or tried to. And it was just really well done, really interesting, worth a watch for sure.
There's a really good clip on YouTube. I'm sure it made it into the show of him freestyling in like a freestyle.
Yeah,
battle.
That's like a legendary.
It is
clip,
like
yeah.
him on
he's
the street
like 19
corner.
Years old,
dude. He's like 15.
Just
apparently
just,
he's
going
like
for
so
it, yeah.
young there, but he's so good. He's just got that presence.
Yeah,
that and that voice and his flow is so good.
Yeah.
And he's you knew, like you look at people rapping and stuff and there's always something about someone that just stands out where you're like, oh shit, this guy's good. It can be such a subtle difference between someone that's just going to be another rapper who, you know, maybe they could do it, but are they going to really stand out? He had it all, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Biggie.
Yeah.
So here's a book I have been reading that a friend of mine called Sarah, who's one of my mods, sent me a package of goodies from Texas. She sent me a book called Speak Texan in 30 Minutes or Less.
Nice.
And I got some phrases in here that are pretty okay. good. I thought we could work some of these in.
There's a snake in my boot.
One of them is, you don't want a Texan to say, you're as ugly as a mud fence. But you do want a Texan to say, why, you're as handy as hip pockets on a hog.
Nice.
A hip pockets on a hog. I like that.
I like that, yeah.
And his hip pockets on a hog.
Yeah, I'm going to use that.
Wow, they're both
one.
Very countryside kind of
so
things,
you could
aren't
describe
they?
Someone who is all talk and no substance as, he's all hat and no cattle, which I think is a very Texan reference.
Very,
because it
very.
Involves hats and cows.
Yeah.
So, as ugly as homemade soap, which is a very specific insult to use on someone.
Homemade
Which I quite
soap.
Like. Tighter than bark on a tree means you're very stingy.
Right.
Tighter than bark on a tree. Yeah. Oh, that's good
and
as well.
But you do want them to say, well, he's big enough to hunt bear with a switch. A switch being a very small twig. So that's a
twig.
Good one. A twig. But you don't want a Texan to say, you don't know whether to scratch your watch or wind your butt. Which I think is a good one.
That's really good.
Yeah. Nice.
They're all so like
Texan,
kind of chummy, friendly, jokey, lighthearted, aren't they? They're very warm.
Yeah.
They're very warm. Like, do you know what they are? They are, I've got a word for it here, the Velicor,
right.
Which is the strange wistfulness of used bookshops, that warm feeling.
What, okay, what is the term for wishing that you didn't have such a big pot belly that is preventing you from gaining the agility to suck your own wiener? Is there a term for that?
Right.
That's called middle age.
Right. Just like all encompassing, that is just a part of being middle aged. You can no longer.
Yeah. It's a combination of so many different factors. Number one, you do just start to get a little thicker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I have definitely
you
become
bulk out. Yeah.
thicker. And I remember when I was 18, I was like a stick. I weighed 10
stone. Like a
stone.
Championship whippet. You were just like,
it was like a
nothing,
weapon.
Nothing to
just
you.
Bones, yeah. Just bones, just bones and like very lean, small amount of muscle that was there was very distinct because there was no fat. My body fat was like zero. When I look at myself now, I think I don't eat that badly. You know, I'm not like,
but
a
your metabolism
slump.
Slows down. You're like, yeah. You know, it's just the way
you
it goes.
You just get thicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old men especially just get bellies, right? Like,
but listen, right? There is a benefit. You know, you wake up in the morning, you pad downstairs, you know, you head into the kitchen, you open the sort of cupboard at your waist, you get out the tin of beans.
Yeah.
You open the tin,
right.
Put a spoon in there.
Yeah.
Head into the lounge.
I know where this is
kick
going.
Kick back on the sofa.
Yeah.
Have a little spoonful of beans and balance it
pack
on your belly.
That all into your... Oh, yeah.
While you're watching the telly, you know, you've got the ready-made little shelf there for your tin.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
So just think about that. There are some good things that come out of this.
It's true.
It's not all
true.
Negative.
I feel it gives you a more jolly persona. My kids certainly enjoy poking me in the belly and laughing. They think I think it gives you a kind of more gentle... outward appearance of a slightly jolly dad. You know what
well,
I mean?
See, what I do is I make a big effort to hold my breath, like suck it in so that nobody can see it. But then when I'm on my own, I just let it all hang out. You know? So like,
I know a few guys that do that permanently walk around sucking in their gut.
Yeah.
It's apparently, it's just like, it's become a habit.
Well, no, but it's actually, it's apparently quite good for you to do though, because it works like some of your core muscles.
Yeah.
Doing
oh
it.
Yeah. But can you be bothered to do that all day?
No,
how am
God,
I meant
no.
to play in a high quality professional game of Dota?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm at the point now where if I slouch in a certain way, most of my shirts will ride up and expose belly.
Yeah, yeah.
So like that's where I'm coming from nowadays. More or less, like if I'm slouching, that the belly's hanging out.
Oh,
know,
by the way,
just a tiny bit.
Talking about Dota, I had an email the other day. I've got like two emails. I've got like my real email address, and I've got the one that I put on Twitter that I get business requests and partnerships and Raid Shadow Legends emails about. And this guy said to me, "I understand that you are predominantly a professional Dota 2 esport player and occasional streamer, but he wanted to work with me." I just thought, you know, he's really missed it there, that I am a professional Dota 2 player, primarily professional Dota 2 player. That's, I would say, I'm not a professional Dota 2 player. I am the professional.
You
got to
feel a little bit flattered, though, anyway, though, right?
No, even I just know he hasn't done his homework. He would know that I'm number one in the world.
You have to be careful with these things.
He would reach out.
Like, I get loads of these emails every week now from people who are like, "Hey, Lewis, really enjoyed watching Shadow of Israfel back in the day. Can I interest you with 10%? We've increased the brand uptake of emails by 10% in our mobilization marketing strategy. Are Yogscast Limited interested in this?" And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's 10 of them a week from different people, different companies, different clients. It's this new wave of like clever
phishing, spam and stuff. Yeah.
I got
one yesterday, a text message that said to me, hang on, let me find it for you. This was supposedly from the Royal Mail.
Right.
From just a random number, which is always going to be bullshit. Royal-Mail, your parcel is waiting for delivery. Please confirm the settlement of $1.99 on the following link. Then there's a link to rm-uk-delivery1.com. And I'm thinking, okay, so that's a load of absolute bollocks. But there's so many of them now. And to most people, they'd think, no, oh, yeah, I know what that is. Because especially during lockdown, everybody's ordering stuff all the time. So you could easily fall for that. And it's probably just a cheap way for them to get £2. And if they just send it out to every bugger, you know, enough people are going to fall for it. It's just this kind of stuff is out there, man. Like this phishing. And a lot of these marketing things I don't think are much different. They're just blanket blasting everybody. They get this list of email addresses and they just like vaguely personalize it by mentioning Shadows of Israfel. And then they just plug in that to a million different people. It's annoying. It's really
bizarre.
Professional spam.
So anyway, there's some other words. I've got some other words. Do you want to hear them? I think a couple of these are feelings you might have heard.
Okay.
One of them is opia, which is the ambiguous intensity of looking someone in the eye, which feels simultaneously invasive and vulnerable.
Mm.
I can't say that I've ever felt that one.
Wow, no. That's a very specific. Some of these
feeling.
Are just, I'm confused. You could just sum it up as, I don't think you yeah. could specify.
You don't feel something weird when you look people in the eye? Like, I'm really uncomfortable making eye contact with people.
I think most people are, though. That's the thing. It's not.
Some people aren't really comfortable. But some people almost like sexually aggressively stare you in the eyes.
That's different,
like,
I guess.
I think it depends how you're. It depends what you're talking about. Like, there are some people who you can be just talking about the weather and they're like looking deeply into your eyes and you think, Jesus, that's too much. But if someone's confiding something in me or it's a really intense conversation, then you know you look someone in the eye because you want to you're listening properly listening, not just sort of waiting for your turn to talk sort of thing. So I think it, you know, I mean, geez, I look people in the eye quite often, but when I think about it, I look my kids in the eye a lot. Kids really do look you right in the eye when they talk to you. It can be about anything,
yeah,
and they really look right at you. And you look right back at them. And there's no, it's your kids. So there's no sort of discomfort there. But it's as you get older, I think, you start to doubt yourself in a more metaphysical way. And maybe that's why people tend to look away. It's easy to just talk when you're not looking. Because you don't have to, really connect with the other person. And maybe
in order to listen
easier.
Well, I have to close my eyes, though, I feel like often.
I just thought you were bored when we were talking.
He's like falling
I'm having
asleep.
Having a conversation with Lewis. Just, don't worry. No. I just have to close my eyes to concentrate. No. Yeah,
he's got
no.
He does that Steve Jobs thing where he rubs his temples with like his pinky fingers, like when he's speaking to people.
Oh, shit. So there's a couple more here. Rubitosis is the unsettling awareness of your own heartbeat.
Oh, I get that all the time.
I get that.
That's related
I
to
have,
anxiety and
it's
stuff.
It's not
though.
Unsettling. It's just like, I don't know if I feel unsettled when I hear it, but just sometimes I'm aware of it. Like sometimes when I go to bed, I'll lay down. I can almost like feel my heart like in my ears or something. Like, you know, when you're you're like laying on your pillow.
Yeah.
But I don't feel unsettled.
With all the stuff I've had with the operation and all the heart stuff, that's made me acutely aware of my heartbeat over the last few years to the point where even just hearing it is alarming. And that's why I wear a Fitbit to be able to actually look at a printout that says, oh, this is your heart rate. Because I'm like, oh, because it seems faster when you're listening to it and you're worried about an increase, like a rate that's spiraling. So that's like the source of all my anxiety attacks was always that my heart rate was going up. So having a machine tell me, no, don't be stupid. It's normal that's just like instantly calms me down. So that is a very real, but I think that's linked to anxiety more than just an awareness of your heartbeat. Some of these aren't emotions. Like the underlying emotion there is anxiety about something else.
There is a couple. One of them is lachesis. The desire to be struck by disaster, for example, to survive a plane crash or to run out of a fire.
Wow.
That kind of bizarre. Do you ever get that kind of edge of the void, call of the void kind of feeling that, like, just for a split second, like a fraction of a second when you're on the edge of the cliff, you think, I wonder what it would be like to jump off this cliff.
I do sometimes.
Like a split second, sure. Yeah.
That is a weird thing, though. I wonder where
it's
that
weird,
stems from.
It is a weird thing, yeah. I think it's because we are aware of ourselves and stuff like that we can think that way, sort of thing, you know? Like, we have an imagination. We can imagine, like, a scenario sort of thing. But you always imagine it as, like, a bystander of yourself, right? Like, you don't... I don't imagine it, like, how would I feel, like, you know, seeing the ground like come towards me. When I imagine it, I'm like watching myself fall off the cliff, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
from a distance, like, which I guess is also part of us being aware.
Do you
of
wonder if in
stuff.
A way imagining a terrible thing and then it not happening is just a reaffirmation, sort of, you know, psychologically you're thinking, heh, didn't fall off that cliff, pretty good, that's a W. For me, big win.
Yeah,
sort of
I don't
thing.
Know. Like, I find, especially now with kids, like, I imagine things happening a lot more. Not to myself, like, but to my kids. Like, they'll be outside, and I'll think, like, oh my god, like, what if a car just like suddenly just sped into our driveway and nobody was ready for it and hit one of them, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh fuck, like, what can I do to make sure that that doesn't happen or keep them safer, sort of thing.
But don't you run over those scenarios in your head? Like, I do that thing where I'm thinking, what if someone grabbed one of the kids and tried to run off with them? Like, it's almost like preparing mentally.
What if they busted into the bathroom when I was in the bath full of baked beans?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a...
And they they saw me eating the beans.
I feel like, to me, when I think of stuff like that, or like if I, you know, can be bothered to analyze it after I've had a thought like that, I just think that it's your brain's way of sort of keeping you alert, knowing that you're you're responsible for other people, you know, and not just yourself. So you have to just be sort of like, not like, I feel like my brain is like, okay, you can't really be complacent here. Just, you know, be aware and watch them or whatever. And it'll be fine.
I think you need to be aware of that. That's what's happening as well. Yeah. Like you've just said, I think that you are like, you know, otherwise I think you'd just be anxious if you were at stage one of that. I think stage two is that I have a reason to be anxious. My brain is conjuring up these images to, because I care and I want to protect, you know, my kid. I don't, you know, but at the same time, that doesn't mean you have to be anxious. Because I think it does make you anxious if you have this subconscious fear that, you know, any second he might run into the road and get hit by a lorry or something. God, it must be terrible to constantly have this, because there must be hundreds of ways. A tree could fall down, plane could crash, a bomb could go off.
You're responsible for them. Kids don't think like this. Like, they, you know, they don't see the danger. They don't, you know, they don't understand. They're just like, they're outside and they're losing their minds because it's not inside. You know, like, it's as simple as that sort of thing.
I've felt this as well, you know, when I was having that bath of baked beans in your house.
Yeah, well, I mean, after I told you not to.
And so you tweeted this. There was a clip of you this week that went out on your YouTube channel where you were like, I don't think Lewis has ever taken a shit in my house. and if he has, he did.
People still talking about that.
Classic, he did it really quickly.
A classic, pulled a fast one on me. He just did a really
I actually replied on the YouTube video, but it got blocked because I said, I have totally taken a shit in Sydney's house. That was my reply, but because I said the word shit, it got filtered out. So
did you actually take a shit in my house?
I've taken about 10 shits in your house, probably. I've been there like 25 times.
I know, but I just figured that like you were shitting at the hotel. I didn't realize you were just like fucking pinching a loaf.
Saving it up. Look, I'm not a messy shitter, so you wouldn't have known. It's like I tidy up after myself. My diet is very high fiber.
We're back on this point again, unfortunately, but I just want to stipulate as well. Lewis is not a stranger, right? Like, I don't mind actually if Lewis takes a shit in my house. Like, I'm more talking about like the plumber.
I'm one of the family.
The plumber is around and he's meant to be fixing pipes. He's like, mind if I just take a quick shit in your house? No. No, find somewhere else to shit. Fix my pipes and get the fuck out of here. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not letting some stranger shit in my house.
And I feel exactly the same feeling you do. Like, when we went out with the kids and stuff, I was as paranoid as you were about, I don't know, him, like your kids running into the sea or something.
Yeah.
Or you have to
watch out for them. But it's
especially since they're just rushing around like crazy people. You think, it's only a matter of time before one of them cracks their head open on a something, you know.
Yeah. You know what? There's a TED talk by Brené Brown, and she does. She's like
Brené Brown,
sort of psychological, sort of researcher, and she analyzes like human emotions and stuff like that. She's got some really good talks, and one of them was about anxiety and it, like, worrying about things that haven't happened and are unlikely to happen, or even if they are likely to happen, what purpose does worrying about them actually serve? Because if you worried about your kid being abducted and you became obsessed with it and you thought about it all the time, if they were abducted, would you feel less bad because you'd spent years worrying about it?
Of course
not.
Like,
worrying about something isn't going to make your reaction to that thing, if it does happen, it's not going to make it any better.
No, of course not.
So essentially, if you can figure that out, then really you can put aside a lot of those worries, because you realize this is actually not only serving no purpose, but it wouldn't even make me feel better if it did happen to think, knew that was going to happen. You're not going to think that. There's no satisfaction.
From my point of view, I mean, I guess some people do this, though. I'm not sitting around worrying about this stuff.
No, exactly.
I don't think that this is going to happen. But again, I'm aware enough to know, for example, not to leave my kids, you know, ever, sort of thing.
Right.
Because then it has more of a chance of happening. Again, I'm not sitting around, you know, with my teeth chattering, sweating profusely, thinking this is going to happen at any moment. Like, I'm fairly confident it's not going to. I don't want to jinx it or anything. But
and you've also rationalized it out in your head that you know that this isn't helpful. And that it's,
of course,
But sometimes you can't stop it.
You still think about this stuff and you think, there's certain things that I know tangibly I can do to fully prevent this from ever happening. And they're easy things that I incorporate into my life every day. And that's why I don't have anxiety. Exactly.
Carry a gun at all
times. That's why I have an automatic rifle on me at all times, in my car, strapped to my back. And I have a fairly sizable hunting knife, safely stored in a pocket on my belt as well, because you never know. And that's why I feel better.
When a wild lion or bear may come busting out wildly, and you may have to take that bear boy down.
That's right.
Yeah. In a Texan way.
With a switch.
With a switch.
Big enough to hunt bear with a switch.
It's a Texan. Yeah. You got to take him down with a Texan pile driver or what? There's always like some Texan something, right?
It's a big place.
Yeah.
A Texan.
So let me leave you with one more word. Mm. The final word is chrysalism, which is the amniotic, I guess, womb-like tranquility of being indoors during a thunderstorm.
I love that.
Okay, that is I have felt many times, and it is such a wonderful feeling. I love that.
I like being under a balcony or some awning, and it's pissing it down, and there's lightning and thunder, and you're sitting there close to it, but not in it. That is very satisfying.
I love
that. You can smell the rain.
Love that feeling of being very aware of how powerful nature is, but at the same time being safe from it, you know.
Yeah, like, it's nice to have that reminder.
We live a 5-minute walk from the sea, and if there's a storm or there's a storm coming, you'll really hear the waves, like, you know, like, and we're not like right on the sea, you know, like it's still like a good 5-minute walk or whatever. But you can hear them loud as anything, like out at night when it's quiet and stuff. You just hear, and you can just imagine all these waves and stuff. And you just think, fuck me, man, nature's crazy. Like, it's so powerful. Like, you know, at any given moment, if nature just decided, that's it, we're fucking toast. Like, there's nothing we can do to stop it, right? Like, it's a lot of water. And
get the switch.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. But yeah, no. The only other thing I would say, a feeling that feels great relating to rain and thunder and stuff like that, is I don't know if you've ever had this, but you're out doing errands or something, and it just starts fucking pouring rain, and you get drenched. There's no avoiding it. You have to finish these things that you're doing. You're like slogging around, you know, getting these things done. You're wet. Your feet are all wet and everything. And then you get home and you put on like a nice, warm, crisp new pair of clothes and you dry off and stuff. Oh, shit.
You're right.
I fucking love that. You have a cup of tea and stuff.
Very similar, but not the same. It's a dip. Do you want to make up a word for that right now, Sibs?
Just heaven. I can't emphasize it enough. It's just such a great feel. I love that feeling. It's so like comfortable and cozy, and like especially if you get back and your mom is like getting you these clothes and like putting on a cup of tea for you and stuff, and you're just, all you have to do is just like get out of wet clothes and somebody's there helping you, sort of thing. I love that feeling too. It's really nice.
A wonderful. Well, I think hopefully that will leave people feeling warm and fuzzy. Thank you for listening. I hope you guys are all doing all right out there.
We're almost out the other side of this hellish year.
Since we sort of asked a lot earlier in the podcast for people to send us pictures of what they were doing on their jobs and stuff, I felt more in touch with our audience.
Yeah.
I see them, it's nice. Yeah. It's nice to see. Yeah. So tweet at us with what you're up to and what books you've read and stuff like that. I'm interested to read anyway. It's great. I love it. So I hope everyone out there is doing all right. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
See you next time.
See you next week.
Yeah, see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.